You're listening to Special Education Matters, a regular podcast about things that matter in special education. I'm your host, Michael Bohl, and I am the proud father of an 18-year-old boy with autism. As a listener to this program, you are well aware of the increasing calls for targeted instruction of students who struggle in various academic areas. While schools take on this challenge as part of their regular teaching program, it is difficult for them to devote one-to-one time to students and really focus on deficits and areas of growth. Dr. Julie Albanese is the director of Fit Learning in the Inland Empire and Orange County. They provide one-to-one and small group tutoring and instruction. We discuss how it all works, how they do assessments, and the results of their program. Julie, thanks so much for joining us on the program today.
Happy to be here, Michael. Thanks for inviting me.
Happy and thrilled to have you here. And today we're going to talk about Fit Learning. And if somebody doesn't know what Fit Learning is, let's just start with that. What is Fit Learning?
So Fit Learning is an educational model developed in 1998 by four amazing individuals, Dr. Kendra Newsom, Donnie Newsom, Kim Behrens, and Nick Behrens. And these four individuals started in a closet, essentially at University of Nevada, Reno. And they saw a need to support learners of all ages, all abilities, mostly the faculty's students. And they wanted to support the learners in an educational setting. And they hit the books, they hit the research, and developed what's called the Fit Learning Model. And what we do is we start with the foundational skills of what makes a good reader, what makes a good mathematician, what makes a good writer, a comprehender. We break down all of those skills based off of their learning channels, like how they're learning it. And we break it down into the smallest smallest component possible. And from there, we build on those foundational skills. And what we see is all of these amazing gains, what we call REAPs. Those are retention. You know, they're maintaining that learning skill for long periods of time. They don't just memorize it and dump it. They've learned endurance, how to do it for longer periods of time. So we're not just teaching fast readers, but readers that can endure longer passages, chapters. You know, eventually we go to college and we have to read chapters of textbooks. And then we also teach, based off of this model, how to apply the skill, that tiny, small component skill, to a larger, more complex skill. And we get that for free.
All right, so what does that look like? So let's say an 8-year-old might be a typical student, uh-huh. Right? So they come in, they sit down. And so, you know, a parent might be wondering, like, what's that experience going to be like for them? What do they do?
Oh, what do they do? That's amazing. It depends. So we always start with an assessment. We start with a consult mm-hmm. first. So I always want to talk to the families. What is it that's bringing you here? Sure. Why are you seeking support? What is it that you need? What are you seeing? What are you experiencing? What is your child experiencing? Can you talk to that? Sometimes, you know, it's great to have the child there and they get to talk about their experiences at school and talk about, I just don't feel like I'm fitting in, or I'm not succeeding. The sad one, which is not true, you know, I have to say it's not true, but they say the teachers think I'm dumb. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, heartbreaking to hear that. And, you know, coming from an educational, you know, standpoint and just, you know, on the other side with a learner, we're not thinking that you're dumb. So it's just sad to hear that that's what's perceived and what's felt by the learner. Based off of that, then we start off with an assessment. We might assess, you know, in one of three main domains, our reading domain, which is like reading mechanics, like how do you read? How do you pull things apart? How do you bring them together? We work on auditory processing, and that builds up to spelling and writing, for example. We have our math curriculum that we look at, and then we have our what's called our logic curriculum, our comprehension, problem solving. That's a unique curriculum to Fit Learning. That's what drew me in, especially for a lot of our ASD learners that, you know, we were speaking about a little bit earlier prior to recording. So that's really what we start off with. We start off with an assessment, and from there, I get to meet with families and develop an individualized, tailored plan for that learner. You know, so we might see deficits across the board. However, at home, mom is experiencing a lot of painstaking concerns in math. Math is just the part that's just pulling teeth, hard to get the learner to sit down. Of course, there's some other underlying issues that we might need to target for math, but that is the main concern. We're going to start there and tackle that. We create an individualized program based off of the assessment, based off of what their learning channels are. Maybe they're a strong auditory learner, but their visual channels are weaker. So we want to strengthen that weaker channel up by working on the auditory channel first, or vice versa. And from that individualized plan, we get to sit across from the learner and one-to-one 50-minute sessions, 5-0. We don't need anything more, anything less. Wouldn't it help? It's all data-driven from the past 20 years of research. 50 minutes is what we need to get 10,000 learning opportunities in, to see personal bests on previous scores. And in 10 weeks, we're seeing a 25 percentile gain. That's a grade levels growth. 5 days a week, 1 hour working one-to-one with a learner. And what that looks like, it's fun. I like the word gamified. Everything Sure. we do is gamified. And that's what drew me in, because I need fun in my learning. If I'm not having fun, then I'm not learning anything. If they're not learning anything and not having fun, then we're not making progress. So we have a lot of programs that we're running, and we set up a goal. Yesterday, you got 10. Today, we need 11 vowel sounds. I want you to get 11 vowel sounds all correct, and you earn points. You earn personal best boxes. Boxes are like our token economy system. And they earn crazy clickers. And at the end of the day, they get to buy something from the prize tower, or cash it in for money or gift cards, whatever it might be. And, you know, at the end of the day, really what they get to experience is confidence.
Oh, is, sure.
Because they're achieving goals that they hadn't achieved in the past. They're experiencing growth and what it's like to be successful in an educational setting, because we get to start where the learner is at, not where they should be. We're not opening up a curriculum table and saying, okay, it's September and you're in fifth grade, so we're on, 5-9 here, and that's where you should be. We're looking at that curriculum table. We're looking at the assessment and starting where the learner's at, maybe a couple of steps back to really rapidly accelerate their learning at a times two level.
So it's about once a week or so, the 50 minutes?
5 days a week.
5 days a week. Intensive. Oh, so it's quite intense.
It's okay. A very intensive program. So it's not for the weak of heart.
And how long would that run, those 5 days?
10 weeks is typically weeks. Our okay. enrollment. Right, exactly. And it's a great question, because Fit Learning, a lot of people think, I thought you were like a fitness instructor. You call your tutors coaches. They're coaches here. So they're thinking like we're running around doing jumping jacks. Sometimes we do. Sometimes we need some movement breaks and we do jumping jacks.
Right.
But it's really analogous to fitness. Boot camp was really big. It's really big around right now. Fitness boot camps, where you go in for your hour session, your 45-minute session, and you do these high intensity interval training. 30 seconds at station one, see how many ball slams you can do. And then you're trying to beat those scores. That's exactly what we're doing. And with the goal that, after 10 weeks, you're accelerating a grade level. You can't go work out at a gym one day a week for 50 minutes and expect to lose 20 pounds in 10 weeks, right? We want to be intensive with it. We want to make that progress fast. And the reason for that, I explained to a lot of families, is your student, and you can experience, you know this from experience, I'm sure too, is the least restrictive environment. And if we're moving backwards into a one-to-one setting in a lab outside of the classroom, that's very restrictive. That is not a classroom setting, a classroom environment that, where we want our learners to be successful. Now, we might start off that way and then eventually look at building them back into a classroom setting, if that's the need. But the goal is short term, get them to grade level, get them to be successful, feel confident in the classroom. They no longer need our services.
Okay. So if as a parent, then if I have a child with struggling with whatever learning needs it might be, you're saying, okay, come on in, we're going to do the assessment and then 10 weeks and you're going to be like, most people would jump a full grade level. Like that's a big jump, right? And so you're making, I guess, in a sense, a bold statement. How often, my next question as a parent, I'm like, okay, is it going to work for my kid? Like what are the odds that you really are going to jump a whole grade level?
And I have not seen a learner not make that those achievements because we're starting at grade level, functional grade levels. So, you know, that's the caveat as well is your learner might be in fifth grade. However, functionally they're at third grade level. So we're looking at, you know, starting point today in 10 weeks, I can get them to fourth grade level. And then after fourth grade level, fifth grade level, there are some instances where we have a lot of barriers, you know, learning history that's being brought in by the learner. You know, so for example, a 21-year-old, one of our learners, he's 21 with ASD. He's coming in with a lot of learned behaviors around academics, scrolling responses, you know, so just kind of going, we're going to talk about names of letters, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K. You know, he's just kind of going through what he knows of letters, but not actually attending to maybe what I'm showing him.
Sure.
So, you know, minimizing the guessing responses or, you know, some other type of barriers like learned helplessness. A lot of our learners are coming in, especially after COVID, with learned helplessness, just like, I can't do it. I just shut down. I just don't know it. So we have to work on positive statements. We do timings, just like a high intensity interval training, set a timer for 15 seconds. Let's make as many positive statements as we can before this timing. I am good. I am smart. I can do it. I will try even if though it's hard, and just coming up with a lot of different positive statements to overcome some of those barriers. So there's a lot of behavior plan intertwined with our program. We don't just put stimuli in front of a learner and say, you're going to learn. We have to also, you know, address the learner at an individual level and what they're coming in, you know, with their private events, you know, those negative statements or even fear of being wrong. That's another, you know, barrier that sometimes our learners come in. They don't want to raise their hand. They don't want to provide a statement because they're unsure that it might be the wrong answer and they don't want to get negative feedback or quote unquote, look dumb. And, you know, for us here, we teach them at Fit Learning that those are learning opportunities. Those are not incorrect statements. Those, you know, those are allowing us to know how you problem solve in that moment. And then we can work through it. So, you know, there are times where we do have some other, you know, foundational skills to work on before we actually get that grade level approach. But 9 times out of 10, we're seeing huge jumps in these learners' improvements, as long as we're getting consistent, you know, 4 to 5 days a week, consistently across the 10 weeks, we're seeing amazing improvements. And that's across ability, across age, you know, across, you know, all of that, because, again, an ASD learner, is going to make the same level of gains as, you know, a learner with dyslexia and a typical developing learner. They're just starting off at different points, but because we're all individualized, because we, are defining what we're actually teaching and measuring because of that measurement system, we get to see this 25 percentile gain regardless of, you know, ability, age, you know, functional level.
Right. Now, Julie, a lot of students may be on an IEP, for example. Are you guys able to make that part of the IEP that they receive these outside supports? I'm sure parents are thinking, this might help with cost, for example.
Yes. Yes, we are a non-public agency. We've been able to, you know, get that certification through the department.
Nice.
And
for California.
Yep, for California.
And maybe other states as well.
I don't know about other states.
You can speak for yours.
Yeah. For my two labs here, I've been successful and I've been coaching our sister labs, across California as well. It should be noted that, you know, we are an affiliate network. We're not a franchise. So every lab that is, open is independently operated by the individual. So I came to this lab. I came to wanting to open up this lab because this is the community I live in. And my son is growing up here now, my daughter. And I'm just seeing, you know, I want to help grow my community and the future leaders of my community, because this is probably, hopefully, where I'll retire and want, I want to be taken care of. And, you know, I wanted to support my community. Other labs have been opened by occupational therapists, by speech and language pathologists, parents like yourself who's had learners go through mm-hmm. the process, however, had to do it from a different lab that wasn't close and said, I need this here. I need this here and I need it closer. I need more people to know about this. The mission of Fit Learning is to transform educational practices for all individuals, you know, across the world. And the four founders could not do that themselves. So they said, here is this model. You guys take it. They don't want to franchise it. So for myself being an NPA, I was able to go through that process, and now I can coach the other affiliates on how to go through that process as well. But going back to your question of the IEP, what's beautiful, because we have developed the model based off of all the foundational levels of like reading, for example, all this, the stepping stones, our goals align 100% with the schools, with the IEP. So, you know, when I'm looking at an IEP, he's going to learn sight words. He's going to learn mm-hmm. CBCE words. He's going to read passage and recall. Those are all the goals that we're working on. However, we just define it more clearly, because if you think about it, an IEP goal, and this is how I'm trying to infiltrate the school, IEP goals should not be 80% or above across 3 days. That doesn't tell you anything.
Right. And how do you measure it anyways?
But, yeah. How do you measure it anyways? Because, you know, especially when your teacher's hands are tied to 30 or 40 learners in the classroom, or, you know, in a special educational classroom, maybe 20, it's hard to measure that on a daily basis. So they might kind of pick out, you know, a couple of things, run something five times. He got it 4 out of 5 times. That's 80%.
Often just to collect the data. I mean, I think exactly. We all know that the only way we're going to help students who are struggling is one-to-one instruction with an instructor who's like, where's this kid at? Where do I take this person?
Right, exactly.
And they do it. So.
Right. But then also clearly defining, well, what does it mean that he's reading it? Because we have the 504 plans and a lot of the IEPs have a lot of accommodations that are in place where it's reading, like a program is reading to the learner. And then they're retelling what they learned, but then they're saying the learner will read a story and retell, you know, whatever it is. And it's not measuring the same thing.
Sure.
So what we do is we clearly define what we're looking at, and we define it based off of fluency. And fluency is really mastery. You know how to ride a bike. If you don't fall and you can ride it for 10 minutes straight, you know, or a mile, and make sure that you do that without falling down. Right. And once you do that consistently and you're able to ride bikes with other friends and things like that, those are your comparisons, right? You want to be able to ride a bike like your friends do and not fall down. That's the same thing with reading. So eight times out of 10 or 80% across 3 days, you know, that can look very different from a lot of different learners. So I can, you know, do a test and get 80%. And you could do a test for 80%, but I did the test and it only took me a minute to do it. You took the test and you took an hour to do it. The teacher had to sit next to you and right. prompt you throughout the whole thing. So we use fluency, and that's a time-based measure. So if you're looking at teaching CVCE words, you know, we want to be clearly defined that I'm going to see the word, I'm going to say the word, and I'm going to master that by reading 80 words per minute. That's true mastery. That's been measured across mm-hmm. learners, thousands and thousands of learners, that is mastery of a skill. And I want to get 100% accuracy, of course, but I want to do that 80 words per minute, and that's mastery. That means you're never going to lose it. You're going to maintain it, and you're going to apply it to other skills. And that's where, you know, we are trying to work with IEPs to look at, this is how you should be defining behavior, not just eight out of 10 opportunities, but can he read it 80 per minute? Because that's what a fluent reader does.
Well, Julie, we're coming towards the end of our time here. And I was wanting to ask you a final question, more focused on you. You have a BCBA, we've got a PhD in psychology. So you probably had a variety of don't know, paths you could take or jobs you could go after. What brought you to this?
Well, my first and foremost love is for the science of learning. That's how I got into, you know, behavior analysis. I just love the science of learning. I love the principles of behavior. I love that I can teach you to do a handstand and I can't touch my toes. Like, I cannot do that, but I can teach you it because I know the principles of behavior, of how we learn and how to measure it. And, you know, after 15 years of being in the field of in-home behavior analysis, which I loved. I loved working with the families and the parents. And I just, there needed to be a change. And the change was this measurement system, how we're measuring and defining behaviors, because I feel like we've lost touch about that with our science. And what, you know, the founders of Fit Learning did was, this is what we're measuring. We're doing in an educational setting. So I wanted to take a pivot and say, show like, this is still our science, but this is it in an educational setting, and be that stepping stone for the next BCBA that's coming in and saying, I want to use our science and use it correctly in drug and alcohol or in the prison systems or whatever it might be, so that they know like we can do more than just working in home. We can work in the educational setting. But aside from that, also, you know, there's personal experiences with myself and my niece, for example, mm-hmm. who we see that, you know, start to struggle in school. And the answer is test, diagnose, medicate.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And that's such a common trend for a lot of our learners that are struggling. And as a behavior analyst, as, you know, a scientist in learning, we know that we have to look at the environment first. Let's not look at the internal environment of the learner and try to mm-hmm. place the blame of the problem in the learner.
Right.
Let's look at the environment itself. Is this a learning environment that is supportive of this individual learner? And 9 times out of 10, it's not. I just had a recent experience where, you know, I just recently gave birth to my daughter, my second. And
congratulations.
Thank you. It's a little sleep deprived. And, you know, she's actually not due for another 11 days. So she was actually due March 11th, and today's March 3rd. so I had to go in early because the doctors identified that my environment was no longer supportive of her growth.
Okay.
It was, and that was so hard to hear, that, you know, everything that I'm doing as a parent, as a mom, for this child that's not born yet, is not supporting her growth.
Right. So much for those prenatal vitamins. Toss those.
Exactly.
Out, right?
Exactly.
But I took everything prenatal vitamins.
I know. I took my prenatals. I wasn't drinking coffee. Now I'm drinking coffee.
You're right.
And, you know, and that was hard to hear. But think about that analogy of your learner is no longer making progress in this environment. So are we going to, you know, is the doctor going to say, well, your unborn child is the problem and we need to medicate, diagnose that problem? And it's, you know, or do they say, how about we take your child out of the environment and put her in a successful environment? You know, why don't we do that at school as well? Your learner is not successful in this environment. It's not because, let's go first, ADHD, you know, dyslexia, this, that, let's put them on Wellbutrin. Let's put them on, you know, these medications that, you know, they might not need. Let's first look at the environment. Let's pull them out. Let's put them in a different environment. Let's look at our teaching methods. Let's look at everything else that's surrounding
sure.
this child.
So the medication's a last resort versus first.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And do that. So, you know, those were like some pivoting points for me to say, you know, we can use our science to support other individuals and still individuals with ASD in a different type of way. And I just wanted to be that first stepping stone as I continue to train and teach new BCBAs coming in, as I continue to work with educators and as I continue to work with psychologists, advocates, everyone, that there is a different way to teach, you know.
Well, Julie, thank you so much for your time today and giving us all your information about Fit Learning.
Yes. No, thank you for inviting me again. And I wealth of information. Anyone that wants to talk to me, reach out to me and I will get on my stool or whatever, my post, and talk to them about what is Fit Learning.
Sure thing. I'll make sure to add all that to the show notes as well.
All right. great. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another edition of Special Education Matters. For more information, including show notes, head to our website, csnlg.com/listen. And if you like what you hear, please consider giving us a review on iTunes. Those reviews bring us lots of happiness. I'm your host, Michael Bull, and we will talk again soon.